Welcome. I'd like to call our meeting to order this evening. We'd like to welcome you to the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, February 1st, 2023. If I could ask you to please stop your conversations. We've started our meeting. Good evening. We're going to begin our meeting this evening. I apologize. Apparently, I couldn't be heard earlier, but we'd like to welcome you to our Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, February 1st, 2023. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson. Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. We have 6 of 7 council members present this evening. Please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Standish will present upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Historic Preservation Commission will be meeting next on February 6th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Planning and Zoning Commission will hold their next session on February 7th at 5 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then the next Town Council regular session is scheduled for February 15th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We'll go to Mayor and Council reports this evening. Councilmember Jones Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Project Grad needs you. February 4th, there is going to be a painting session from 9 to 2 p.m., and you can work shifts 2 hours or 2.5 hours. And they're going to be painting HTV circuits, and if you don't know how, they're willing to train you. They still need us to go to Amazon to their wish list and start purchasing items that are needed. I just want to remind you that the 12th graders are not allowed to participate in the preparation for grad night, and so we really need you all to reach out and help our young people make this a successful, happy, safe graduation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones Ivy. Councilmember Green.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have, if I could have the first slide up there for me. And there we go. I just want to thank Christy and the mayor and the manager for getting these awnings up. I don't know, it's been over 2 years now that the awnings of the community center have been shredded, and they're up there, they're well done, and they're protecting folks from the light coming in, and it just looks really nice. So thank you, Christy, for making this happen. Second thing I wanted to point out is shown here. All of us have been following water pretty closely, and although you may not be able to see it on here, if you follow the blue track, it goes down to Rocky Point, where they are beginning to look at a desalination plant, which could be brought by pipe up to Phoenix. And all the steps that are involved in it are outlined in a proposal, so it's something you may want to keep an eye on. It's certainly important to us where water is a survival issue for us. And the third thing is maybe coming up or not, but Some of you may know of the flooding that occurred at Catalina State Park with more than close to 300 people were stranded there. And it's not in Oro Valley, but it's awfully close to us. And a lot of people in Oro Valley with real high wheels on their trucks and so forth helped get some of the people out of there that really needed to be gotten out of there. And I want to give a shout out to them. The bridge, the mayor has told me, is for that wash has been approved. So it's a matter of getting on the ball and getting that bridge built so we don't have folks stranded in Catalina. Thank you.
Other council reports this evening? I'd like to report briefly. This last Thursday was a small business summit. This was an event that the town partnered with the Oro Valley Chamber of Commerce. This was the second small business summit. And there were approximately 150 individuals that participated. That's about a third increase from the summit the previous year. There were 13 sponsors. It was really peers teaching peers. And I think for all those that were able to attend, certainly benefited from that event. And then last night was the beginning of the Citizens Academy. This is a program that's offered by the Oro Valley Police Department. It's a 12-week course that provides an excellent overview of the department and the programs and services that our police department provides. There were about 24 individuals at last night's meeting. And if you would like to participate in the Citizens Academy, I encourage you to go to orovalleyaz.gov and to get signed up because the spots go quickly. Councilmember Solomon.
Yes. Last Thursday, our deputy chief, who's been with the OVPD for 35 years, Jason Lauder, retired. There was quite a ceremony for him, including a motorcade out at Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, and it's very impressive as to representatives and chiefs from all different types of agencies, from local to Homeland Security, that he had worked with throughout his career and had worked with Oro Valley Police Department. And just as a side note on that, since it was Jason's official retirement, we now officially have our current deputy chief, Curtis Hicks, who is in attendance at the meeting tonight in place of the chief. So if you haven't met Curtis, he's been around for a long time. And he's now officially our one and only deputy chief. So congratulations. And we look forward to him sticking around for a while because, as he said, we've made an investment in his name plate. So he owes it to us to stay for a while. So thank you.
Okay. Mr. Cornelison will present his report this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have one item. So recently, our Parks and Recreation Department with our consultant, Site Southwest, just hosted a recent community input opportunity and workshop regarding the Vistoso Trails Master Plan. And as part of that, there were some illustrations that were shown on the boards of some draft concepts for community input. Those draft concepts have been posted to the town's website under the Parks and Recreation webpage. And so I encourage the public to go take a look at that and provide input. There's an email address with Liz Cole, who is a representative from Site Southwest, and people have until February 10th to submit input. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Cornelison. The agenda will remain as posted. We'll go to call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. When you come to the podium, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley or not. Mr. Anthony Ferrara.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council Members, Town Staff. My name is Anthony Ferrara. I am a resident of Oro Valley, and for the many reasons that my neighbors will speak of after me, I hope you vote against the potential rezone of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarenes potential proposal for development on the project on Calle Concordia. Thank you.
Joanne Michelson.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for the time. I have spoke to you a couple times. I am a resident of Oro Valley. I live on Calle Buena Vista. I've stated I'm against the rezoning, but I have two letters of neighbors that have unable to attend tonight, so I'm going to read them to you really quickly. This one's from John Willick. He lives at 8850 Calle Buena Vista. To whom it may concern, please add my voice to those opposing the upcoming rezoning measure in Oro Valley. As a long-term resident whose family moved here into my home in 1962, I have witnessed the effects of population growth and all that comes with it, including traffic, congestion, road noise, air pollution, light pollution, etc. This new measure would only make things worse and reduce the quality of life for those of us living here. I'm opposed to commercial rezoning and anything other than single-family housing. So he's been in his house since 1962. My neighbor who lives next to him babysat him, and she's still in her same house, too. This is from Jeanette Beauvert. Greetings, Mayor Winfield and Town Council members. My name is Jeanette Beauvert. My husband Brian and I are residents of Shadow Mountain Estates. We live in a 3/4-acre parcel on Calle Buena Vista, a couple blocks from Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. As a third-generation Californian, we moved to Oro Valley almost 2 years ago to escape the tyranny of California. Some of my questions and concerns are, one, why rezone our neighborhood? Why isn't the church directed to put up the structure in another part of town that is zoned appropriately? Number two, this is a Christian attitude. Is this a Christian attitude that if the church doesn't get its way, that they will file a lawsuit against our town? I hope that you haven't been exposed to other threats, bribes, or blackmail with regards to this issue. Number three, I find it interesting that two of the pastors make a pretty hefty salary, live in gated communities, attempt to stay away from class envy, but looking at the fact that they have been blessed with living in a gated community with spectacular views, never subject to this kind of thing, it prompts me to wonder what happened to the golden rule. I respectfully ask you to vote against the rezoning. Thank you.
And my apologies in advance. I'm not sure the last name, but Liam D. Depo.
Hello, I'm Liam DeDepo. I am not a resident of Oro Valley. Before I begin, I would like to say last time I spoke, I stated I was part of the Youth Advisory Council here in Oro Valley. I would like to clarify that the opinions and views I express do not reflect or represent the Youth Advisory Council in any way. I am here once again as a CDO student to speak against the Church of the Nazarene rezone. This rezone of the church will cause much more traffic to an already dangerous street. We have new drivers, and our school constantly sees collisions, whether they be fender benders or even T-bones. The church has said that they will try to navigate our school schedule to avoid conflict. However, as a student who participates in extracurriculars, I and many others are not at school for just the 7:30 to 4 o'clock hours, but for times after school as well, as weekends. When I attend my Sunday Odyssey of the Mind practices, it is a struggle to get through the exiting church traffic to get to the school. An added facility would only worsen that drive that I must take to and from school during the weekends, as well as home from after school activities such as our student government pep rally setups. Our football games, which attract crowds as large as the ones that occurred during our release, are just another example of how our schedule with the OVCN complex would overlap. When these events occur, it is a mad dash out of the parking lot, which continues into Calle Concordia. As well, this complex is built for youth sports. This means you are adding even more young, inexperienced drivers to the road, which means even more possible collisions and an unsafe driving environment. I ask the council to block this rezoning from continuing. Thank you.
Ann Young.
thinking about him when you called my name. Sorry about that. Hi, my name is Ann Young. I am a resident of the town of Oro Valley. I have lived next door to OVNC since it was built. I have supported the church in all of its endeavors to build new buildings over the years because of its growth. And I've supported the church until 2 years and 3 months ago when a neighbor approached me and showed me what the church had in mind for building directly next to my property, east of me, that they had purchased from the Tejas family a few months before. That threw me for a loop. They planned to build an enormous, and if you remember, they were going to build a huge, huge, huge football stadium inside, like Butler Fieldhouse. But you guys said, no, you can't do that. But they still want to put in a huge sports complex that will directly affect me and my neighbors. My neighbors and I have moved to Oro Valley due to the fact that we knew the zoning laws. I'd lived in Oro Valley before it was Oro Valley, by the way. But we have adhered to the zoning laws that you guys, that we have for Oro Valley. And we've been very happy to adhere to those rules because we don't want our lifestyle changed to the point where all kinds of businesses can come in. We already are surrounded, of course, by the high school, which we're fine with. It's been there before I was. So the high school is something we are happy to live with. The town utility building, or field, is right west of us, and it's fine. They've got oleander bushes all the way around it. Fine for me. I don't see it much, and that there's not a whole lot of traffic going in and out. We have the aquatic center, and we have Weaver Park. Is it still Weaver? No, Cree Park now. It was Weaver Park back in the day. The rezone, if it's passed, will drastically affect our lifestyles. Please do not pass this rezone. In my mind, it's a commercial endeavor, not a church endeavor. Thank you.
Vicki Terrace.
Hello, my name is Vicki Terrace, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. Tonight, I would like to read a letter from another of our neighbors who's also a resident of Oro Valley who could not attend tonight. Her name is Claudia Dill, and she lives at 911 West Calle Concordia. I have owned and resided in my home on Calle Concordia for the past 25-plus years. I have been blessed to be able to enjoy the quality of life this part of Oro Valley provides. In other words, peacefulness, friendship, space, and real natural beauty, to mention the highlights. As I read in the paper about 3 weeks ago, the developer who wishes to commercialize part of the region had it dead right. There is a lot of citizen resistance to this plan. To dump a large commercial entity in the middle of a higher-end, well-established, original residential neighborhood is absurd. To be clear, I'm concerned about traffic. There are only certain times of the day when there is traffic of note on Calle Concordia and Calle Buena Vista. The remaining roads in Oro Valley remain low traffic. Locals drive to and from their destinations and are the primary users. It is country living at its best. Air pollution. It goes without saying that until we all drive electric cars, the resultant air pollution will be a significant increase if the traffic degrades the quality of the air we enjoy. We are having to put up with the degradation from and around the 680 facility, and there is nothing positive to say about the air quality that said increases in traffic would cause. Next, noise pollution. As I said, we enjoy country living in this part of Oro Valley. The noises we hear include the occasional horse whinny, hawks, and various other birds and coyotes. The non-commute times of Calle Concordia are just as quiet. Last, I urge you to look deeply into your conscience and ask yourself, is this the highest and best interest of those iconic neighborhoods, the long-term residents, and the town itself? If I was in your shoes, my answer would be no. And if you were in our shoes, thank you. Claudia Dill.
Tim Terrace.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members, and town staff, my name is Tim Terrace, and I live in Oro Valley, directly across the street to the west from the Church of the Nazarene. I'm speaking tonight against the church's request for rezone and expansion. The Concordia Buena Vista group of neighbors has well over 120 members and is growing daily. Thousands of dollars and man hours have been spent and invested to stop this initiative. This is not marketplace, a golf course, a community center, or apartment buildings. This is a group of residents that supported you to place you in the positions that you are now. The assumption is that you would provide protection of our lifestyle. The threat of legal action against the town is a desperate move by an uncaring applicant. Their initiative will absolutely cause permanent, tangible damage to the neighborhood and the community. You need to stand up for us as we stood up for you. Rejection of this proposal is the right thing to do. Thank you very much.
Darlene M. Backen.
Good evening. My name is Darlene Bakken, and I am reading this for a neighbor who is in her high 80s, and she's lived in her house for 50 years, but she couldn't be here tonight. Council members, you've heard from many people, including me, who oppose the rezoning requested by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. We are concerned about increased traffic, noise, speeding, accidents, sidewalk and street issues, potential flooding, further loss of the dark night sky, and loss of wildlife, and so on. Upon your vote rests the future of a small, quiet, residential neighborhood, a neighborhood which is one of the last remaining desert areas in Oro Valley. It is a refuge for wildlife, some of which are four-footed, live underground, or are winged, and also home for my neighbors and me. Please do not vote to turn this special land into more concrete that disturbs the neighbors, the animals, and the precious remaining natural beauty of Oro Valley. Sincerely, Sheila Lepley.
Doug Dalby.
Good evening. My name is Doug Dalby. I am a resident of Oro Valley. I've lived in Oro Valley for 43 years. In an effort to be objective, I've tried to find a positive in the Oro Valley Church's Nazarene rezoning request, and thus far I've not been able to find a benefit to Oro Valley, the immediate neighbors, or the surrounding neighborhoods. I am evidently not alone in my thinking, since 100% of the adjoining neighbors, as well as a great number of the other residents in the neighborhoods, are opposed to this rezoning request also. The reasons for being against this are numerous and have been elaborated on at various meetings and in various letters to both P&Z and to the town council. I feel that Oro Valley, as well as the neighborhood, would be negatively impacted, and there's no positive reason to build a 75,000 square foot commercial building, a football field, with 70-foot lights in a rural residential neighborhood. Oro Valley will be negatively impacted with the various complications and problems that arise with the increased traffic, infrastructure maintenance, ordinance enforcements, and activity while receiving no financial benefit from the church. Please vote no and stop OVCN's request for rezoning. OVCN's long-term goals have obviously outgrown their current location. Thank you.
David Divert.
My name is David Divert, and I'm an Oro Valley resident. My wife and I have lived across the street from the church for about the last 26 years. Over the years, the church increasingly has been a negative intrusion for the neighborhood with no positives. Has the church contributed significantly to increased traffic? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to decreased levels of safety for pedestrians and citizens? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to increased noise? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to increased light pollution? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to decreased residents' views? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to decreased wildlife? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to decreased vegetation? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to increased heat island effect? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to decreased tax revenues? Yes. Has the church contributed significantly to decreased quality of life for the neighborhood residents? Yes. And I say that twice. Yes. Has the church contributed anything positive to the neighborhood residents? No. The bottom line is that the area was a residential agricultural neighborhood for many years before intrusion of the Oro Valley Church of Nazarene, which actually started in 1986. For the church leadership to try to impose more damage to the neighborhood with their proposed rezoning and construction is not in accordance with Scripture, which says, do not plan evil against your neighbor who dwells trustingly beside you. Stop the damage to the neighborhood by stopping the rezoning and further construction. Thank you.
Corey Toinsing.
Hi, I'm Corey Toinsing. I live down the street from the church. We are actually new residents to that particular neighborhood. We've been there for about 2 years. I'm going to speak on behalf of one of my neighbors as well. We have two young girls. We have one at CDO High School and one at Cross. And our goal is to stay in that house and watch our grandkids be raised. So we plan to stay in that neighborhood a very, very, very long time. We have girls that walk to school. And our concern is obviously the traffic and our kids being hit. So we really are opposed to any more traffic on that road already, because we already have high schoolers driving back and forth. So we moved there for the high school so our kids could have a safe place to go. I also want to speak on behalf of Kathleen German. She lives at 655 West Cali Concordia. I continue to oppose the rezoning and reiterate that my proposed sports complex is not only not compatible with our neighborhood, it is not needed. Several years ago, Oro Valley turned down my request to build a small covered arena to protect my riders and their horses, stating that since my address is on Cali Concordia, I was not allowed to have the structure in front of my house. As a consequence, the professional trainer from the Netherlands that I hired at a considerable expense left for a different facility, and my business suffered financially. If the church is granted a rezone and is allowed to construct massive buildings and pave over land to expand their parking lots, my business and my boarders and their horses will suffer enormously. The noise, the traffic, the lights, and the flooding impacts us, not the church. Enough is enough. Please do not allow the rezoning of our neighborhood. Kathleen German. Thank you.
Karen Steinbrons.
Well, good evening, Mayor, Council members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Karen Steinbron. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I own two properties in the vicinity of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, and I oppose the rezoning. I've spoken to you three times before in the last 12 months, so I'm not here every time, but it's such an important thing to us, to me, my neighbors, that this cannot be approved. This is a residential neighborhood. Residences are next to the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene on three sides, and of course the high school on the other side. You've heard the issues: traffic, safety, lighting pollution, air pollution, runoff. Do I need to get flood insurance now because of what they may do? I came to the last planning and zoning meeting, and I heard the mitigation measures, and these do not appear adequate to me, to the neighborhood, and should be strongly looked at and not glossed over. The fact that this area had hard zoning is why I purchased property here. I'm a native of Arizona. I've seen a lot of changes, and I like the fact that we had hard zoning in this community, and now I'm worried that it's not going to protect the enjoyment of my property or the value of my property. I won't have peaceful night skies. I will have extra lighting that I'll have to consider. I'll have other noise if I want a barbecue in my backyard, and I will get flood insurance. Should this be approved? No. I consider this intrusive and a nuisance and inconsistent with the Oro Valley Town Code 24.4 for the planned area development. This is a nuisance to the neighborhood. The proposed use, this mega sports complex, a concession stand, an amphitheater, these are not usual and customary activities of a neighborhood church. We enjoy the Oro Valley Neighborhood Church, but it's outgrown that, and it belongs in another location, not in our neighborhood. I implore you to vote no. Thank you.
Devin Smith.
Good evening, Mayor Winfield and council members. I have my two with me because my husband is out of town, but I think it was really important to be here tonight as the vote for this draws near. I've spoken before, and there's not much that my neighbors haven't already addressed. I echo all of their concerns and all of their objections.
If you could state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. And
sorry.
The names of your girls would be great, too.
Oh, okay. I'm Devin Smith. I am a resident. I live on Calle El Milagro. I have my daughter, Everly, and my son, Luca, are with me. So, okay. I echo their concerns and objections. The light, the construction, the noise, the traffic, all of it will greatly disrupt our beautiful, quiet, safe, nature-filled community, which we all love to explore and be a part of. Thank you for listening each week as we show up with our concerns. The fact that we are here each week should be evidence that there is something very special here that is worth protecting and preserving. It's a beautiful neighborhood and should be preserved as it is currently zoned for those who live in and love the neighborhood now and for all those who will live in and love the neighborhood for futures to come. Thank you.
That closes the call to audience. We'll go to the next item on the agenda, which is the consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Could I ask, this is my first meeting, and I didn't know I had to put my name down. Could I have maybe 2 minutes of your time?
If you would fill out a blue card, I will allow you to speak. Can you fill out a blue card? They're in the back of the chamber.
Okay.
Normally I ask if there's anyone that else is wanting to speak during call to audience. I didn't do that this time, and this is a good reason why I asked that and should have. But I made a motion. I believe it was seconded.
Yes, I seconded.
seconded by Councilmember Green. This is in regards to the consent agenda. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. So I'm going to return to call to audience before going to the regular agenda. If you could give your blue card to Mr. Standish over to my left, your right. And since I've made this exception, if there's anyone else that's wanting to speak during call to audience, this is your second chance. Okay.
I appreciate the chance. My name is Sue Dugan, and I have a home here in Oro Valley, and I am not here about the church. I would first like to thank Mr. Solomon and Ms. Jones Ivy for responding to an email that I sent out a few weeks ago. My concern is I think there's a service that needs to be revamped a little bit. And it's, I called the city and asked to speak to a health department or animal control. And I was told to go to Pima County. I went to Pima County. They told me where to fill in the form, which I did. And then about 10 days later, I get an error message back saying, you made a mistake. And I went, no, I didn't. I know where I live. I know what's going on here. And then they said, we don't handle anything for Oro Valley. You have to go to the police department. And I'm thinking, no, that's kind of weird. But anyhow, they sent the complaint to the police department. I went into the police department, and I spoke to an officer. He listened, he filled out, gave me a case number, and said, okay, you know, get back to us. So I had an open case. Then on Monday, I got a call from a lady here, I don't know which department, and she said, the police department can't help you. So I've been kind of passed around like a sack of old potatoes. I've been going from here to here to here to here. And I think you need to kind of come up with some kind of, if you have animal control, you need to maybe come up with your own people or something. I don't know. But I think Mr. Solomon was as confused as I was from his email of who does what here. But it's very confusing. I've spent, you know, weeks on this, and I'm nowhere. I've been told to go away. So I think this service needs a little revamp. I'd be happy to meet with anyone outside of this meeting to go further on this, if anyone's interested. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cornelison, if we could follow up with Ms. Dugan.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yeah, just to clarify, this was a confusion where the town of Oro Valley contracts with Pima County to handle animal control. And when this individual contacted Pima County, the person there had no knowledge of it and told her, you know, no one was responsible. So, we'll get that cleared up. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to the regular agenda. Mr. Standish, item one.
Appointment of a member of council and the chief financial officer to the Oro Valley Health Care Benefits Trust Board.
Our chief financial officer, Dave Gephardt, will present this item.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. So this item this evening is for the town council for you to appoint one of your members to be on the Oro Valley Health Benefits Trust Board. Of course, the trust board was approved by you at this at the last town council meeting. And so so that's the purpose of this item this evening. I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to nominate Council Member Mo Green to serve as the council representative to the Oro Valley Healthcare Benefits Trust Board.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Council Member Jones Ivy. Discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Council Member Solomon?
In case the public isn't aware, we're extremely fortunate to have Dr. He goes by Mo Green. He's actually established and worked at the state level to establish healthcare systems statewide. So We have somebody that's eminently qualified for this. It's a highly specialized area, and it's highly unusual to have such an individual sitting on the governing body. So I think we're fortunate, and I sure hope he's willing to do it. I think it'll be a great benefit to the community.
Other discussion, Council or Vice Mayor Barrett?
Councilmember Green, is this an appointment that you would like to fulfill?
I'm humbled by it, but I'll do my best.
Great, thank you. I think you would be a good representative to council for this. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, just I think a quick correction to the motion.
Sure.
It's not just to appoint Councilmember Green, but to appoint the Chief Financial Officer
Councilmember
Green to serve as.
Yeah. So let me restate the motion. I move to appoint the Chief Financial Officer and Councilmember Green to serve as trustees on the Oro Valley Health Benefits Trust Board.
I second that.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Any more discussion?
Does our Chief Financial Officer get to say whether or not he's willing to?
He does not. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. We'll go to item 2 of the regular agenda. Mr. Standish.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible actions regarding two items related to a proposed surf-through car wash located on the southwest corner of Oracle Road and Water Harvest Way within the Oro Valley Marketplace. The two items include A, conditional use permit to allow development of a drive-through car wash, and B, architecture.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Principal Planner Michael Spaeth will present this item.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor, Council members, members of the audience who are still here. My name is Michael Spaeth. Our purpose for this item, is to, as Mr. Standish said, to consider a public hearing related to a proposed car wash. There are two items to consider: the conditional use permit as well as the architecture, and this item is presented for discussion and possible action this evening. To orient everyone with respect to the subject property, it is approximately 1.5 acres in size and is located on the southwest corner of Water Harvest Way and Oracle Road, outlined in yellow here on the screen, and is immediately north of the In-N-Out Burger. The site is located within the southern portion of the Oro Valley Marketplace that was approved in 2007, and this portion of the marketplace included restaurant pads, retail pads, and actually even a gas station that was originally approved for this location, shown in the right-hand image, again outlined in yellow. As a reminder, that the most recent approvals approved by council in November for other parts of the marketplace did not affect this portion of the center. Again, there are two items. The first is item A, a conditional use permit. Within the Oro Valley Marketplace, it's zoned Rancho Vistoso Planned Area Development C2, or Commercial 2, which requires a conditional use permit for car wash uses. The car wash proposed by the applicant is approximately 5,500 acres in size, with on-site stacking for about 34 vehicles, and it also includes outside covered vacuum stalls. As council knows, uses that require a conditional use permit require an extra layer of review, as they typically involve the potential to have additional impacts on neighbors and require that extra level of scrutiny to ensure that the site is a proper fit for the use and that appropriate mitigation measures have been incorporated.
Mr. Spaeth, I think you may have said 5,500 acres, just for clarification, 5,500 square feet.
Thank you. Yes, Mayor, 5,500 square feet. That would be a large car wash. With that, for these types of uses that require a conditional use permit, the zoning code does establish specific criteria to conduct that review. This includes things like protecting the public health, safety, and welfare, as well as compatibility with surrounding uses. The zoning code also establishes specific criteria for convenience uses and vehicle car washes that are reviewed against the applicant's proposal, and all car washes are reviewed for conformance with the above criteria. So with regard to the first criterion for the conditional use permit, again, protecting the public health, safety, and welfare, we really want to focus tonight on two things. First, noise, and then second, traffic, I'll address in my coming slide. So the applicant did submit a noise study as part of their application that was included in your packet. As part of that, the building location was purposeful. As you can see on the right-hand image, it's about 900 feet from the future apartments that are immediately north of the Water Harvest Way and Oracle Road intersection. It's a little over 1,000 feet from the nearest residential to the east across Oracle Road. They're shown with a yellow star. And, of course, it's separated from future residential in the apartments and existing residential, as well as the state park by either the Water Harvest Way, Oracle Road, or the CDO Wash to the west and the residential to the further west over in Catalina Shadows. The orientation of the building also was purposeful. You can see kind of shown in the bottom portion of the right-hand image where the building is located, and then the middle graphic is the actual noise map that was included as part of this study, and you can kind of see the heat signatures there, if you will, as the noise effects dissipate the further you get from the center. And with the building orientation on an east-west trajectory, it was purposeful again so that the primary points where the noise will be are away from residential. Again, if you can kind of extrapolate where that heat map is with relation to the graphic on the right, no noise impacts are anticipated in either the future apartments to the north or the existing residential to the east or further yet in Catalina State Park. With regard to traffic, the applicant had worked with staff to redesign the site several times to accommodate as many vehicles as possible on site. As I said before, the design will accommodate about 34 vehicles within the center, which is much more than what is typically experienced in car washes throughout the region that generally have about space for 20 to 25 vehicles, so significantly more than that. As you experienced when you were out there on Friday and are probably familiar, this area does have an existing traffic challenge associated with the adjacent drive-through for the In-N-Out Burger. The graphic shown on the screen here is the site plan revision that we're working through with the representatives and consultants for the In-N-Out Burger and Town West to address that issue and expand the driveway for it. So currently, the drive-through accommodates about 12 to 13 vehicles before you back up onto the main thoroughfare. And of course, as the image on the top right of the graphic here shows, most folks have probably experienced traffic backing up even further than that, sometimes all the way down to the Ramada. So this redesign, while working with the In-N-Out Burger, does accommodate 28 vehicles, and it also has an excess overflow lane to accommodate even more stacking if necessary. So we do believe that this will resolve that existing issue out there and free up that main drive for traffic to move freely throughout this area. A condition for this redesign and approval is included in Attachment 1, and that condition requires that this redesign not only be approved from a development review perspective, but actually be constructed and open for business before a certificate of occupancy is issued for the car wash. So they are tied together. The second criterion really has to deal with compatibility of the proposed use and surrounding uses. Of course, folks are familiar with the site. It is vacant. It's within the existing Oro Valley Shopping Center. It's adjacent to Oracle Road, again, just north of the existing In-N-Out building, and then there's some future retail and restaurant pads within this portion of the center. So the proposed use is consistent with those uses, and again, I'd just like to reiterate the distance from both the residential, future residential to the north, and the state park to the east, again, separated by Oracle Road, Water Harvest Way, or CDO Wash. So there are barriers there that help the compatibility of this use. Criterion three, it looks for consistency with the goals and policies of the general plan. This particular use will not have an impact on view sheds of folks looking across the site to the Catalinas to the east. The site sits approximately 15 feet below Oracle Road, and the proposed building height is 32 feet plus an additional 10 for architectural detail. Again, the permitted building height within the center is 39 feet, so they are below that. The design for the building is also consistent with the Oracle Road Scenic Corridor requirements. Again, being located within an existing previously disturbed lot, it is consistent with goals and policies relative to managing growth and smart growth and things of that nature. And it will also meet or exceed the requirements of the zoning code relative to water conservation, so it's also consistent with goals and policies relative to that topic. Lastly, hours of operation. The zoning code requires that drive or car wash uses, be limited to the hours of 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and the applicant has agreed to limit the hours of operation to those hours. As I stated previously, car washes are also subject to conformance with the convenience use criteria of the zoning code. This addresses things like the number of uses that are allowed within a center, how they're accessed, timing of development for those uses, as well as their location within a larger center. The applicant's proposal is consistent with all of this criteria, save for one, the location requirement. The zoning code requires that convenience uses be a minimum of 500 feet from any public school or public park. Of course, Catalina State Park is right across the Oracle Road. It does allow town council the ability to reduce that requirement when there are major barriers between the proposed use and a public park. In this case, Oracle Road, of course, is a state highway, is a major thoroughfare, represents a major barrier from a code perspective. So the applicant is requesting a reduction in that requirement from the 500 feet to 420 feet. And then lastly, the zoning code also establishes criteria for car washes. This includes things like building design and then water conservation. The applicant's proposal is consistent with both of these criteria. Code requires that a minimum of 70% of the water used be conserved and recycled during their daily operations. I know the applicant has a little bit more detail on what they've experienced with some of their other locations, but in working with the town's water conservation specialist, we found some averages for a drive-through car wash like this that would typically use around 12,000 gallons of fresh water per day, based on an average number of vehicles. And so that 70% reduction requirement would reduce that down to about 3,600 gallons per day, which is roughly equivalent to what a small sit-down restaurant would use. So just to kind of give some context for your mind's eye of what that code requirement will achieve. And again, the applicant will be required to meet that as part of their building permit process should this move forward. The second item for consideration tonight is the building's architecture. As I stated before, the building is approximately 5,500 square feet in size, not acres. Again, with a maximum building height of 32 feet. The design, as you can see in the image on the screen, includes varied roof and wall planes. It will use and pull from the approved colors and materials that were part of the original Marketplace Master Architectural Design Guidelines, specifically things like desert hues, rock veneer, and tile roofs. I would like to caveat that this graphic is a little bit dark, but just for context and verification, it is going to be using the same rock veneer that you see in surrounding buildings here, like In-N-Out, the old Chase Bank, and then The Red Lobster, again, in these buildings for surrounding context, they use similar hues, similar materials, and similar tile roofs. So in summary on that item, this request is consistent with both the Oro Valley Marketplace Master Architectural Design Guidelines as well as the design principles and standards of the zoning code. So in sum, the applicant is requesting a conditional use permit and architectural approval for a car wash on an existing disturbed vacant lot. The item has been reviewed for consistency with all zoning code and general plan requirements, and the Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended conditional approval of item A and approval of item B. And please note, Mr. Mayor, there are two separate items that each require an individual motion tonight, and the applicant is here to give a presentation as well. And I do, as I stated, it's not up there, but I do in a back pocket slide have the condition should anybody want to reference that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Spaeth, for your presentation. Mr. Rob Longacre with WLB will present this item on behalf of the applicant. And we'll have questions later, Council.
Good evening. Rob Longacre with the WB Group. With me tonight as well is David Little, his project engineer, and Paul Brown, who's joining us virtually from California. So hopefully Paul can hear us this evening. We are here on behalf of the property owner, Lifestyle Center LLC, is an affiliate of Town West, headed up by Mr. Jim Horvath. Before I begin my presentation, I must admit I've gotten accustomed to being in Oro Valley Council meetings until late, late hours. So I've decided to adjust my presentation from a 10-minute presentation to a 2-hour presentation. So if you could cue up my slide presentation with the 500 slides, that would be greatly appreciated. I won't take up much of your time. I do appreciate the thoroughness of Mr. Spaeth's presentation tonight. I just wanted to touch on a few things I think that are important to this project as we seek your approval this evening for both items. The first item I'm calling site plan evolution. I just wanted to point out that the original concept, the original submittal for this project, the site plan has changed. And why has it changed? It's changed actually to improve the functionality of the site and to provide the best possible layout. Mr. Spaeth touched on some of those items, but I'll review them briefly again. There's now a single point of access into the project site from the north-south access drive. This will help traffic patterns and traffic flow. The building has also been oriented toward the east so that the eastern end of the site, where most of the noise is contained, is now directed away from residential neighborhoods to the west. Stronger pedestrian connections have been made. And then access drives were aligned. The access drive into the project, as you can see, is now but aligned with the future stacking area, drive-through lane for the In-N-Out Burger. Speaking of stacking, maximum stacking. So as Mr. Spaeth mentioned as well, the site's been designed to have as much stacking as possible. This allows the site and the surrounding area to operate safely, efficiently, and effectively. We are, of course, aware of the stacking issue at the In-N-Out Burger. I understand that plans have been prepared by other firms, another firm that's being reviewed by the town of Oro Valley, and I understand that approval of that plan is imminent. On behalf of the property owner, we do accept the condition that Mr. Spaeth mentioned requiring the design and the construction of the In-N-Out modifications prior to CFO for the surf room. Intelligent water reuse. So Mr. Spaeth mentioned the requirement of the town, 70% recycled water. Actually, this project proposes to use technology that recycles, I'm happy to say, 82% of the water. The system's called Pure Water Recovery System. It's actually developed by a company in California called Pure Clean. They actually specialize in this type of system. And they specialize in this type of system specifically for the car washing industry. So I'm happy to report that the town standard will actually be exceeded, knowing how sensitive water issues are, not only in the town, but elsewhere. attractive architecture. I think Mr. Spaeth did a good job with this, so I'm just going to skip over that. I'm going to touch for a moment on renewable energy. I actually just found out recently that the vacuum canopies at the surf-through will be completely covered with solar panels. They will generate approximately 120 kilowatts of power. So I was excited to learn that and excited to share that with you this evening. Valuable service to the community. People, generally speaking, like clean vehicles. This, of course, will provide that. It's in a convenient location for Oro Valley. Also noting that actually the closest car wash, full-service car wash to the site, is over 5 miles to the south, the Mr. Car Wash at Oracle and Cool. So I think this will service an area of Oro Valley, the population, that currently has to drive several miles to get to a car wash. And then if I may get briefly philosophical for a moment and talk about a feeling of car wash. So it's a common experience for people to have an increased sense of well-being after you get your car washed. You just feel better about yourself. So for those of you that believe in this feeling, many of you people have this feeling. You can feel it. But if you believe in this, I can promise you that the surf you through will provide this feeling. All right, I'm going to wrap up my presentation. We believe that the CUP application demonstrates the proposal will not be detrimental to the public health, safety, and welfare in accordance with the Oro Valley Zoning Code. This is supported by a positive staff report and by a recommendation that we receive for approval from the Planning and Zoning Commission at their January 10th meeting. On behalf of the property owner, I respectfully request your approval of these items tonight. Myself, Mr. Little, and Mr. Brown would be happy to entertain any questions or comments that you may have. So thank you for the opportunity to present to you tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Longacre. And good strategy to put aside the 500 slides. This agenda item does have a public hearing associated with it. I'll open the public hearing at this time. I don't have any blue cards. If you'd like to speak about this particular topic, this is your opportunity to do so. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing and open it to questions from council. Council Member Green.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A very excellent presentation. I'm interested in where the vacuum stalls are. Are they on the south side? And how many of them are there?
Let's bring the site plan back up. The vacuum stalls, yes, correct. They are on the south side, and I believe there are 10 vacuum stalls. Is that correct, Ina?
Okay. And the second question has to do with how is the effluent from this? I know it's going to be a small amount, and you're doing everything to conserve, but there's soap, there's wax, there are other issues in there, whatever comes off the car. How's that water treated? Where does it go? If you could help me with that.
Sure. And I've learned actually a tremendous amount about water recycling car washes recently. Probably have more knowledge than I actually have needed. But it's actually fairly interesting. There's during the certain phases of the car wash, particularly in the early phases, where that's where most of the water recycling occurs during the initial rinse off of the car, where chemicals aren't added, or you're just adding water to rinse off the car. The water is then stored in concrete vats or cells below actually the drive-through area where it's filtered and recycled and reused for cars over and over again. And then I think about 19 gallons, I believe, per car would end up actually into the sewer system. And that comes from the water that's used in the final process where chemicals are added, et cetera, that really can't be reused again for the next vehicle.
We go into the sewer system as is with the wax and... Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Other questions? Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. When I went out to view this site, one of my concerns was I understood the way traffic was going to get in to the car wash and also to In-N-Out Burger. But I'm not real clear on how traffic is going to exit that business. And I don't see it real clearly on what you've got. So if you have a color marker or something so that I can get a real clear idea on where they're going to enter.
Okay. I'm going to start here. And they are entering here in this direction. This is the stacking area. And then they'll make this movement here, by the way. You can see this drive that's going back out to the access lane right
yes.
here. That's in case someone decides that they don't actually want to get that good feeling when they get their car washed. They can just zip out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But if they want to, then they continue through the building, and then they'll exit here and then go back out to the access lane.
Okay, and I understand this drive is also going to be shared with In-N-Out. Is that correct? The In-N-Out traffic coming in?
So let me point to the In-N-Out stacking would start here and go south. So what I described previously is only for the car wash.
Only for the car wash. Okay. So once the cars have gone through In-N-Out and they come out, do you know where they're going to be exiting? Are they, because that, I didn't, that just wasn't really clear. And it just seemed to be a huge conflict to me on how they were going to smoothly get in. Because as you come out of the drive-through of In-N-Out, you have to come back across that parking lot. So I'd like to understand how is that going to work?
Sure. Mayor Winfield, Member Jones-Ivy, thank you. So, yeah, and I'll do my little drawing exercise here to help, too. So, as Mr. Longacre said, folks will be coming out of the car wash like this onto the main drag. So this right now is the main road that gets essentially backed up today, right? So that road is already there. That's how everybody gets to In-N-Out. So what's going to happen is as cars are stacked in here, they'll go through the line, and then unfortunately this graphic In-N-Out is off to the south. But when they exit, they're going to be coming up this drive like this up to Water Harvest Way. And then obviously when there's breaks in traffic, vehicles will exit the car wash. Right, so everything is being fed onto the same access drive that's there today.
So this will actually, the road that you have marked green, will actually enable cars to come in and either go into In-N-Out or go into the car wash, and then all cars exiting will share that road going out?
Correct, yes, okay. Yes, ma'am. So it's going to use the same drive that's there today.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sorry if that wasn't clear.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. I have a further question about the traffic circulation. Mm-hmm. Council Member Jones-Ivy's excellent question brought up for me. So in this area, we're going to have vacuum stalls, and we're going to have people both going in and out. Is there going to be space for both cars going in, cars going out, and people backing in and out of the vacuum stalls off that road?
Okay, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, yes, the expectation is that there will be. So most vehicles that are queued up for the actual car wash will hopefully be in this area, right? And then if it is really popular and folks want that good feeling and it's backed up further, you know, folks will probably need to be on this side of the drive, right? So then there is access for folks to back in and out of the vacuum stalls or leave when they're coming out and just get back out onto that main drive.
Does okay.
that answer your
because
question?
I've been to the surf through that's down by Costco, and its traffic pattern is not like this. You come in, you go through, the car wash, and then you can go out through the vacuums and leave. You don't drive past the vacuums before you get to the car wash. So I feel like that might cause a conflict to have everyone coming in through the same space that they're vacuuming.
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, and Mr. Longacre, if you'd like to add something to it. So the chain of progression where we were working with the applicant to redesign this site was taking into account some of the existing traffic challenges that were out there. And so we pushed to have one access point that everybody was coming in and leaving out of because of where the site is located. So in our opinion, and you know, I don't know if Mr. Keeser wants to chime in as the traffic engineer, we believe that it will work. And again, pushed for that design to fit into the existing circulation pattern that was in this portion of the marketplace.
Okay. I do think Councilmember Jones-Ivy brings up a good point with that. Did you want to respond to that, Mr. Longacre? No.
Just to add that I think Mr. Spaeth described what we think is going to occur accurately.
Which is that you think there will be enough space in the stacking lane that there won't be cars backed up in the
correct
right. vacuum area?
We're expecting that the majority of the stacking will occur in the area of the green line and will not occur in that area. So that's our expectation and to minimize conflict. And you're right, the original design was different and it did something more like you described. So you came in, and as you exited, you came in, you did not drive past the vacuum stalls. When exiting, you drove past them. But I think what Mr. Spaeth was saying is that that required two access points onto the main access drive. And I think the conclusion was that that was problematic for another reason, which was causing problems of traffic flow on the north-south access drive. So that's how we ended up with this design.
Okay, so this northern exit point is going to be an exit only?
The relief point?
Yes.
Here, yes. Yeah, that's in case someone gets through there and for whatever reason has to get out. They don't want to go through or they can't go through or whatever it is. They can just exit.
Okay, so cars can't turn into that to cut the stacking or anything like that.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, I have a question about the vegetation. So one of the site plans and slides shows quite a bit of vegetation in this buffer area to the north. What kind of vegetation is being planned, or yes, this one, what kind of vegetation is required in terms of screening from the road? Is it going to be kind of like what's being pictured here or more like what's being pictured in other slides? Is this just artistic representation, or is it part of the plan?
Yeah, that's okay. That's right. So what's on the screen here, this is actually a sheet from the landscape plan, and it can describe what we're looking at here. So along the northern part of the site in this area here, so there's some existing vegetation that is actually remaining. There's some larger trees in that area. There are new plantings that you can see mostly south of that green line. I can tell you the types of vegetation of your plants if you're interested in that.
That's okay. I just want to know that there is going to be vegetation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, certainly is.
Okay, thank you. And then I have a question about the height on the additional 10 feet. On the architecture slide, it looked like the additional 10 feet of height would be located next to Oracle Road. Is that the plan? Am I reading that correctly in terms of the turrets of the building?
So I'm going to beckon Paul here, see if he can. I'd like him to respond if he's still on the meeting.
I'm here.
Oh, excellent. Paul, did you hear the question?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. Can you repeat it?
I'll simplify a little bit. Where is the additional 10 feet of height when we talk about 32 plus 10?
The additional height is, in fact, along along Oracle Road, and I don't believe it's not additional 10 feet. It's I think the total height is 36 feet total.
Okay, excellent. That was going to be one of my questions: is do you need to go a whole 10 feet, or can you keep the entire building within the existing 39? And it sounds like you can keep the entire building within the existing height requirement.
I believe we're within the existing height requirement.
Okay. Thank you. And then my final, for now, question is about the stacking of the cars along the in and out. So we say there's 28 vehicles and room for 28 vehicles and an excess overflow with one lane. I'm assuming that's this little shaded lane. Would you mind pointing out the additional lane that would be available?
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, absolutely. So this graphic's not better. I thought it might be. My apologies. So yes.
Mr.
So,
Spaeth, I think you need to maybe speak into that mic or pull it to you.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Vice Mayor Barrett. So the new design. Let me see if my other graph here. It is. So the new design accounts for 28 total vehicles, and then yes, you're correct. The little hashed area right here. Primarily, I think, will be where they're, you know, the employee who stands out there with his little iPad or her iPad taking orders will most often stand. But that is available for overflow if necessary. And so I meant to mention during my presentation that a survey of other In-N-Outs and Chick-fil-A's, kind of those high traffic fast food uses around town, typically have stacking for about 20 to 25 is kind of the range. The In-N-Out down in Marana off Cortaro has 20, just for context. So already being at 28 here is certainly an improvement over that. And then, right, the potential to have the extra overflow if needed just adds more capacity.
Okay, so in your opinion, would this be able to accommodate all of the current demand and all of the additional demand that we would receive once this site is fully developed in terms of the additional housing units, hotels, et cetera?
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, I would say that it does, yes. When I was out there on Monday, I happened to count the number of cars that currently back up to the Ramada, and it was 18. Just for reference sake. So having an extra 10 and then excess beyond that, I should certainly think would be adequate. You know, hopefully In-N-Out moves folks along quickly.
Okay. They took down their timer. They used to have a timer, how fast they got everyone through. It's not there anymore. So, anyway, okay. Thank you. And I want to thank you also, just for the public's awareness, I had asked about the water usage. And you did a great job covering that, and I'm pleased to hear from the applicant that it's actually 82% of water recovery. So that's a something I'm happy to hear from the applicant. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Ballin.
Thank you for your presentation. Could you bring back up the site plan? I had a few questions about it. The area to the west that's contained on the other side of the road, what's the purpose of that?
It's serving to provide employee parking.
So it's anticipated there wouldn't be a lot of movement across the road. Those people park, they go in and they work, and basically
correct.
They cross
yes.
again. Regarding signage, you know, what type of signage will be provided so that people that want to get their car washed will know they probably want to turn, you know, left in this case and not right, and so has that been looked at?
Again, I'm going to ask Paul if he can respond to the signage question. Paul, let me know if you can hear us and if you heard the question.
I'm here. Yeah. Surf-Through has a rather extensive signage program, all relatively low ground-mounted signs to direct traffic in and out of the property. So, yes, there will be signage that indicates where to turn, you know, where to go, where to park. Absolutely.
Thank you. And for the northern exit, are there going to be any special provisions there to make it an exit only, perhaps like the type of teeth you see in a parking garage that encourage you not to go the wrong way? Because I foresee people that know this business well and like to get their car washed a lot and say, oh, I know it's not busy right now, and they're going to just jump in through there. And, that you know, you know your business. So what type of provisions are you taking? Because this is a nice feature, but I could also see downsides of having this feature.
Understood. And, Paul, can you comment on that as well?
Yes, sir. We have a chain typically that strings across that exit, and it is exit only. It's provided for people, let's say, that get in the queue and want a car wash and or decide that they don't have the money or need to exit the car wash without going through the car wash. So an attendant would lower the chain, allow them to exit, and then close it back up. So yeah, you can't get in that way.
Okay, so thank you. Is my understanding correct? There will be an attendant there, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and that's kind of solves it.
Well, again, like I said, it's chained off. There's a barrier that runs across that exit that you can't just drive through. So when the car wash is open and people are trying to enter the car wash, yes, there's an attendant at the entrance of the car wash that monitors, you know, loading of the track and you know, spraying the bug juice on the front of the cars. So, yeah, there's an attendant there.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Other questions? Is it Paul who's joining
us?
Yes.
Hi, Paul. This is Mayor Winfield.
Hi, Mayor.
How many employees generally are on site during the operating hours?
Mm-hmm. We provide parking for typically we provide parking for six or eight, between six and eight, and rarely is there more than that. Excuse me. We usually have, you know, a manager on site, a couple people at the front of the tunnel, someone taking money. So really six, seven people probably at the most at any one time.
Thank you. And it appears that there's about 15 car parking spaces for employees. Is that area open to anyone to park there?
Yes, it is.
So it's also in proximity to the multi-use path, so someone could
absolutely.
Yes, in fact, we've had conversations about that with the Town West, and right, that's the idea, that will be available for public parking. If someone to park there and access the loop, then they could do that.
Paul, when there was the questions about the circulation, cars entering, and placement of the vacuum areas and so forth, this configuration is different than another surf through, it sounds like, near Costco. It sounds like you're very familiar with surf through do you have any concerns about this configuration, circulation
actually,
configuration?
Actually, I don't. We have quite a few sites. Surf through operates over 40 sites in the Western United States. And this one entrance, one exit configuration works. I mean, it's important to surf through success to have a site that's easy to maneuver. The queuing on this particular site, like we've got 30 or 28, I believe, plus stalls, that's substantially larger than most. So yeah, I don't foresee any issue with circulation on the site.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion. Councilmember Green.
I would move to proposed conditional use permit subject to the condition listed in the attachment one, based on a finding it's consistent with all applicable general plan and zoning code requirements.
I second. Any discussion? Vice Mayor Barrett?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to ask that we potentially add to the motion the condition that we keep the height within the existing 39 feet. Doesn't sound like the applicant has any problem with that, but in the event that a different business or drive-through came through.
I view that as a friendly amendment, and I accept it.
And on behalf of the owner, I would accept that as well.
Okay. Sounds like.
Okay, thank you. That's and then I'd just like to comment, if I could. You know, when I first heard about this potential for this to be a drive-through was early on in the marketplace discussions. And at first, as a council member, I was a little concerned because I thought, oh, we're trying to develop a restaurant, high-end shopping, you know, hotel type of area. But as the application has moved forward, and it's become more apparent that a lot of the focus has been on residential uses, and then this is already zoned for a gas station, and then learning about the high recycling rate of water, et cetera, and how it fits with the zoning code, I feel like it's potentially, you know, will work well at this site. But I will say this is going to have the best view of any car wash in America, because this is a really beautiful site, and right across from the state park, it's really a gorgeous location. And so that was my initial thoughts as a council member, but as a citizen, I like the surf through, and I know that I'll be washing my car here. So that's my comment as a citizen.
Thanks, Vice Mayor. Any other comments? Folks in Jackson, Wyoming might argue with you, but...
Do they have a nice car wash?
They have the Tetons. Yeah, I'm sure they have a car wash. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. Yeah, we need a second right here.
I move to approve the proposed architecture based on a finding it is consistent with the Oro Valley Marketplace Master Architectural Design Guidelines and all applicable zoning code requirements.
I second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Thank you, Mr. Longacre. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spade. All right, future agenda items. Hearing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Meeting's adjourned. I think we'll take a 5-minute break and then come back for a study session. I'd like to call the study session to order. Mr. Standish, item one.
Presentation and discussion regarding potential town code amendments to private recreation area, amenity, in-lieu fee opportunities, and other related requirements for residential subdivisions, multifamily projects, and mixed-use developments.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Senior Planner Hannah Oden will present this item, and I'd like the council to know that this is Hannah's last presentation as an employee of the Town of Oro Valley. She's taken a position with the Pima Association of Governments, and she's been with the town for about 5 years, and I know we've all appreciated Hannah's work, and we're sorry to see you go, but certainly happy for you and your future with PEG.
Thank you so much, Mayor Winfield. It's been an honor working for the town. All right. And with that, again, my name is Hannah Oden, and I'm a senior planner with the Town of Oro Valley. So really to focus us in on the purpose of this presentation, the discussion tonight, so really we are focused on private recreation areas. So an example is shown on this slide. So this This shows a private recreation area that are associated with often new single-family residential subdivisions. So that's what's going to be the focus of the discussion tonight. So the purpose of this presentation is really to discuss potential changes to the town's private recreation area requirements. And this really stems from the Oro Valley Parks and Recreation Needs Assessment and Associated Master Plan. Those were released in 2020 and 2021. Really key finding from these reports was that there's a need for larger parks in Oro Valley. There's a lot of what's referred to in the studies as mini parks, which are parks that are smaller than 3 acres, but there's really not a lot of larger parks. So based on these findings, Town Council did adopt an objective in the Strategic Leadership Plan, which is a guiding document for the town based on the goals and policies of the general plan. So the actual objective is listed on the slide, but essentially the objective is to prioritize larger neighborhood area parks and amenities based on the needs assessment. So our directive as town staff was to examine our existing zoning code and looking at areas that might be silent or deficient or could be changed to meet the SLP objective for private parks. So tonight I'm going to present key findings from the research and potential solutions to meet the Strategic Leadership Plan objective and address current deficiencies in the zoning code. This is presented tonight for discussion and feedback only. There will be no action taken on this item as part of the study session. Just want to go over kind of the overall process and where we're at. So as staff, we've done a lot of research and identification of key issues and potential solutions to meet that SLP objective. We presented the proposed changes that we're going to talk about tonight to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, or PRAB. Those changes were presented back in August just for feedback and discussion. They were presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission in September. Tonight we're here to get feedback from Town Council. And then following the meeting tonight, that's the actual co-drafting, we'll begin some of the nuts and bolts of, you know, what specific language is getting changed in the code related to recreation area requirements. Once that's all done, we'll present the actual code changes back to PRAB, the Planning and Zoning Commission, and Town Council for consideration. So we've done, I mentioned, extensive research on these proposed changes. So we've, of course, looked at our own zoning code, looking at areas that could be changed or addressed to meet the SLP objective. And we've looked at the Oro Valley Parks Recreation Needs Assessment and Master Plan and the findings of those reports. We've also looked at private recreation area size and amenity requirements, as well as an amenity inventory in a number of jurisdictions across Arizona. And those are all listed on the slide. So all the way from Southern Arizona all the way up to Northern Arizona and Flagstaff. We've looked at the Trust for Public Lands for some best practices. We've also had ongoing discussion feedback with PROS Consulting, which is the consulting firm tasked with creating the Needs Assessment and Master Plan, as well as the Oro Valley Parks and Recreation Director. We've also had initial discussions with home builders to get feedback, and there will be HOA outreach to come. So through analysis and discussion from our research, we found areas in the zoning code that were either silent or not clear, and just areas in general that could be improved to meet that SLP objective. So there are 5 findings that I'm going to go into detail during my presentation. The first finding, just very briefly, just has to do with the consolidation of recreation spaces. The second finding has to do with the kind of minimum size that a park can be to really have value. The third finding has to do with potentially increasing the minimum required recreation area size. The fourth finding has to do with looking at requiring more meaningful amenities. And the fifth finding has to do with requiring meaningful amenities and also simplifying the recreation area requirement for multifamily residential developments. All right, so the first finding has to do with consolidation of recreation spaces. So what we found looking at parks we have in town and our own zoning code is that there really is no mechanism to consolidate private park areas, which can sometimes but not always result in smaller, more scattered parks. An example of this is the Villages at Silverhawk subdivision, which is on the far right-hand side of the slide. Every yellow star represents a recreation area in that subdivision. So there's actually 4 that are split up, and this was developed in 3 phases. So kind of to address this potential, you know, issue and meet that SLP objective, we are proposing some standards to create larger private recreation spaces. So the first is a recommendation to consolidate private recreation areas unless there are special circumstances. And this basically means that a park can't be divided more than twice unless there are special circumstances that exist. So this might be things like topography constraints, or if it's a really large subdivision, maybe having one or two recreation areas, they're still going to be pretty far from residents. So you might want to split them up. So there are certainly instances where splitting parks up more than twice would make sense. However, having one or two larger parks does create a more unified space and creates more room for amenities and recreational value. The second proposed standard is to require new adjacent subdivisions to share private recreation areas. An example of this is the Altera and Valley Vista subdivision, which is shown on the image in the middle of the slide. And that kind of that area in dark green, which is circled in blue, that's actually a shared community park between the two subdivisions that they both use. So instead of, you know, one park maybe providing half an acre, another subdivision providing an acre, you'd have maybe one and a half acre park that was larger, had more room for amenities, and would serve both subdivisions.
Hannah, yeah. Councilmember Solomon has a question.
Oh. Right. I find that require new adjacent subdivisions to share private recreation areas can be very problematic. If you have a master HOA or one developer, like you did an example presented, and they came and had it approved by the town that way, yes. You cannot, how would you be able to get two private homeowners associations that happen to be built next to each other to agree to share recreation space on someone else's property and give one HOA control over another HOA's property? The logistics and practical implementation would be a nightmare. You can't get HOAs to agree internally on how to maintain and regulate their own existing recreational spaces. So yes, in a situation where you have a master association, it can work. But I don't see any practical way, and I'm not even sure it'd be legal, to require two separate property owners developing adjacent subdivisions to form HOAs that have legal requirements not on their property. And even if you were able to do that, it'd be a never-ending fight between the homeowners as to what is to be maintained or how it's going to be maintained. So I just see that as extremely problematic. I agree, yes, in a master HOA, or if you get somebody like, I forgot the name of the developer that came in and basically laid out the plat for that entire property, and that was one of the items where they consolidated it. But I sincerely doubt that we would be able to, or that it would even be a good idea to try to require adjacent subdivisions to share private recreation space. It's just not practical. Of course, that gets on to what I know you're talking about later on, and that is an in lieu of fee, where then that money can be used to create a larger park.
Carry on, Ms. Oden. Councilmember Bowen. Yeah.
I agree with that. Actually, as somebody who lived near the Silverhawk development, I know exactly why they have four smaller parks, because it developed in phases. So I think it is not totally unsensible to have small parks within a development that develops in phases. So, yeah, I don't understand how this would effectively be implemented, and also how we would avoid the risk of developing too much recreation area if the development never finishes. Has any thought been given to that?
Sure. So if I may, Mayor Councilman Solomon and Councilman Bowen, so particularly in the Altera Valley Vista example, well, actually with villages at Silverhawk, Those were both rezoned by the same property owner. Okay, so that's where that arrangement was set up in effect. Okay, so for Alterra Valley Vista, two different national home builders built each subdivision. So they had two different ones. And so the way that was managed is there was literally a line drawn straight through the rec area. Builder A built the north side. Builder B built the south side. There will be limited opportunities to do this. So, we recognize that, Councilman Solomon, especially when you consider what's left in Oro Valley. What's left in Oro Valley are small parcels, not subdivisions of this size. Once the area of Loa Choya builds, we're not going to see subdivisions with this many units into the future. So this scenario is predominantly going to come into play for Oro Valley if we annex a large area. That's where, through the rezoning process, we can set up these larger parks. So certainly understand that concern, and that's something we're going to look at further. And Councilmember Bowen, good points. So in the case of villages at Silverhawk, you have a lot of terrain. That's why we felt like breaking up makes sense. There are circumstances this makes sense. So we're trying to avoid creating a one-size-fits-all rule. So as Ms. Oden mentioned that, you know, there's, you know, trying to create a clause about special circumstances, describe what that means, and give commission and council discretion to have this very conversation. Does it make sense in this scenario? So I think the Silverhawk arrangement is a good one because we have two washes in this property splitting it and whatnot. Could there be an opportunity if, you know, if this were going through rezoning again to consolidate and say it on one space? We want to set up a code where we can have that conversation again, not create a one-size-fits-all, because you're right, Councilman Bowen, there are circumstances where it does make sense. So I hope that helps.
Councilmember Green.
Hannah, good luck with your new job. We're going to miss you. My question really is, do you have any data on the use of these small micro parks? How many people are using them would be my first part. And the second part, are the amenities in there such as they would draw people to use that facility? Is it a matter of what's in the facility, or is making it larger necessarily going to make it better?
Sure, I'm Mayor Winfield. I'm Councilmember Green. So to my knowledge, we don't have data as far as use of each of those parks. I can look into that more to see if there is anything maybe from the Parks and Rec might have from that needs assessment and master plan.
Just to say, as a drive-by, I almost never see anyone in those small parks. I can't remember the last time I saw someone swinging or on a sliding board in there.
Councilman, call you Councilman Moe if you don't mind. A next step in this is to reach out to all of the HOAs and ask that very question. And looking at the parks assessment study and the types of things that people were asking for, even in public parks, we recognize there are a lot of small parks. And later in the presentation, Ms. Oden's going to show some of the good, bad, and the ugly, because there are many small parks that were done 10 years ago or so that have amenities that no one uses. They may have a putting green. It doesn't get used. It's a dead space. But there are other examples we've seen where folks have taken a quarter acre, put a half basketball court in it. They put a Ramada in it. They put a play structure in it. They fit it all. And those are, do we've driven by, they do have activity. So in this analysis, we know we can do better. And so the amenities matter. We're trying to do a deeper dive into that and being more specific about the amenities we want to see. So, because there's a lot of variability. Our code allows a lot of variability. And I think it erred too much, to be direct, on the flexible side. So that we want to see that at minimum they provide the good stuff. And what I mean by good stuff is Ramadas get used. Okay. Play structures get used. Bocce ball, not so much. So, but that's the kind of stuff we have out there in terms of examples of ones that aren't used. They're dead zones. So, thanks.
Sorry. All right. So we'll go ahead and continue. So the last proposed standard for that we're looking at when looking at potential consolidation of recreation spaces, and this goes back to where it might make more sense to split up parks maybe more than twice just based on access. So really based on kind of the best practice from Trust from Public Lands, parks really should be about, ideally, recreation areas should be about half a mile or a 10-minute walk from residents because you don't, ideally, you don't want people having to get in their car to go to their subdivision park. So, you know, in this case, if there's a very large subdivision, you might need a recreation area split up in a few ways just so that it's accessible to all residents. So overall, these proposed standards do work to meet the SLP objective by prioritizing large methods to prioritize larger parks.
Councilmember or Vice Mayor Barrett, excuse me.
Thank you. I just had a clarifying question while we're at this location. So when you say divided twice, are we talking about two different parks or three different parks before they have to come?
Right. So it would be two total. I'm sorry. Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, it would be two total parks.
Okay. So divided, it's kind of like divided once, right?
I think, let me see what the language is. Yeah. Split okay. No more than twice. Yeah, we'll clarify the language, but essentially it'd be two separate recreation areas.
Okay, so they could do two separate recreation areas without having to show special circumstances, but if they wanted to do more than two, they would have to show that there was some type of special circumstance like location or topography or something else.
Yeah, Vice Mayor Barrett, that's correct.
Okay, that makes sense. Just when it said divided twice, I wasn't sure if that was a total of two or a total of three, so... Okay, thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you. All right, so the next finding has to do with kind of the minimum size that a recreation area can be to really have value from a recreational and amenity standpoint. So we actually did research. We looked at all of the mini parks that were inventoried in the master plan, and we also looked at other mini parks throughout Arizona, and we actually did an amenity inventory. So we took account of all the amenities that were in those parks based on the size. And so really what we found is that with larger parks, there was room for more meaningful stuff. It had a little more recreational value. So private parks greater than a quarter of an acre have more recreational value. That was kind of the dividing line we saw where, you know, anything less than a quarter of an acre, it was hard to fit a lot of meaningful amenities in there. But things bigger than that, you had more room. So an example of, you know, a park that's a little less than a quarter of an acre is on the upper right-hand side of that slide. So this park, again, it's a little less than a quarter of an acre. It's got a few putting greens on there, not that something else couldn't have gone in there, but there's just not a lot of room for, you know, other things that might have a higher amenity or recreational value. So we are proposing...
So Councilmember Solomon would like to ask you a question.
Okay, well, I gave Mr. Vella a heads up that I was going to have to comment on this slide.
Yes.
The lower value private park, I can take credit for that. That's my Vistoso Estate subdivision on Copper Spring Trail. And actually, it's a great illustration to support a point and to show some other points. You have to look at the overall picture. That was a subdivision that we actually downzoned. It was rated for higher density. We put in 35 half-acre-plus lots. One-third of those lots backed up to open space. On the east side of that, there was a trail system that was put in that connects to the larger Rancho Vistoso trail system. Now, looking at the fact that there was a total of 35 half-acre plus size homes that already had access to extensive trail systems, the question is, what do the homeowners, what would the demographics be, what would they like in their recreational area? Well, what was decided upon was a putting green, and it was indeed actually used initially, and partway through the development, or it actually may have been after all the lots were sold, we actually went to the homeowners during an HOA meeting and asked, would you like us to change out that common area? Would you like some different uses? And it turns out that all the homeowners said no, because any other active use, the neighbors didn't want to be bordering it, and the homeowners found no value in it. So I'm just getting to the point that it's a little more complex than just picking out and saying that's a lower value private park. The current zoning code required us to put something in based on the number of lots, not number of lots, the acreage of the subdivision. Marana actually has a more sensible code where they go by the size or the number of lots. If you have 35 half-acre plus lots in a subdivision, recreational needs are probably going to be different than if you have 80 large single-family homes in the same space. So there's multiple facets to this that need to be considered when we're looking at this. And in particular, the proposed standards require in-lieu fees instead of small parks. Yes, this would be a classic example where we'd say this community does not have any need for additional on-site recreation space. The half-acre lots, everybody has very large yards. It connects to an extensive trail system. So it would be an ideal case to say, yes, we'd like to consider an in-lieu of fee that might go towards a better park system, which wasn't available to us before. Now, that, of course, would go into the fact that that land was now would now be available for, you know, other use, potentially to increase the lot size, other lots adjacent to it.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
So I know there is a requirement regarding the number of lots and the size that's in this code proposal. So in order to meet the quarter acre requirement, how many lots does a subdivision need to have to say you're over a quarter an acre? You have to put something in.
So could you think about that one? I wanted to respond to Mr. Solomon, if I could, Mayor, real quick, and then straight to you, Vice Mayor. First, I want to say and recognize that the subdivision represented in the north is absolutely the best designed subdivision in Oro Valley, minus the park. I just want to really share that. I think this is, I agree with you, Councilman Solomon. This is a great example where a smaller size park, and then Luffy should have been enabled. A lot of jurisdictions we're finding, Pima County and many others, are really have set up their codes to really want the in-lieu fee more so than a rec area. Oro Valley's current code is really to discourage, right now, is discourages use of in-lieu. You can only use it in certain circumstances, and council has the ability to say yes or no. So this would be a change for Oro Valley where if you're less than a quarter acre, it's do an in-lieu fee. That would be the requirement right up front. Because it's, again, at some point, it's just too small, and it stops making sense. So you just wanted to say that I agree entirely that, this is a great example where it would have made a lot more sense to use it in Luffy. And a concern that Prab had, a question was that they were concerned that developers would go to an in Luffy all the time, so we would never get rec areas. And that just hasn't been our experience. With the larger subdivisions, it's very, very rare. And I can't remember the last time, and certainly not with this council, we've come before you and said someone wants that option. They would rather, because the in-lieu fee requires them to provide the town the money for the value of the land and the amenities to improve it to a rec area, and that goes into a fund used by Parks and Rec for existing parks. Most developers, nearly every developer I work with, would rather spend the money improving their own site rather than give the money to the town. So the in-lieu fee is not the end of private recreation areas in terms of an opportunity. But there's a break point, and our sense is it's a quarter acre, again, through analysis of all the ones out there in Oro Valley. So for the vice mayor's question, I see a calculator going. So,
Mayor Winfield, I'm Vice Mayor Barrett. So for the current code, a quarter an acre we required for about 22 lots. For the proposed code requiring more recreation area per 85 dwelling units, which I will get into later, it's about 13 lots. We get you to a quarter an acre.
Okay. Thanks.
Councilmember Bowen.
I just had a comment about the term parks and recreation. Parks do serve the purpose of providing recreational amenities, but that's not their sole purpose. The first park you showed is actually very near and dear to me. I drive past it when I go home from this meeting. Parks aren't only for recreation. They're also for aesthetics. And I know as a homeowner in a division, it can get very, very monotonous if you don't see any breakup of home after home after home. You feel like you're in the city, you know, especially when the distance between the homes is down to 5-7 feet, like it is where I am. So I just want to speak up in defense of what we do. I actually think it's a very good compromise, considering that this area leans towards single-family development. You know, how do we make sure that at least there's something in the subdivision that breaks up the monotony? So I used to see more grandparents and kids there during COVID, but I never once regret having that park, me personally, nor having to pay a dollar or two a month to maintain it. I really do think it's just a nice visual break, and that's all I wanted to add.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The in-lieu fees that are paid would go to the town to support our public parks. Is that right? Yes. I see a head going. Okay. And with what frequency would these fees have to be paid?
Just a
one-time
fee.
Is this a one-time fee?
If I may, it's a one-time upfront fee. So, and it's, we calculate it by the value of the land within that subdivision. So if they have a quarter acre, let's say. So it's a calc of the value of that quarter acre plus the cost of the amenities and the construction to build the park. That adds up to the fee. And it's one lump sum that's paid to the town prior to opening of the subdivision.
Okay. Now, if that decision is made to do the in-lieu fee, are there any other cost-free amenities that these entities would be entitled to in our public parks?
I'm sorry, Councilperson Ivy, your voice trailed off a little bit. I didn't catch the last part.
For those entities that decide they want to pay the in-lieu fee.
Okay.
Okay, I'm understanding that's a one-time fee to support our public parks. Would there be the benefit, since they've decided to make that contribution, would there be any benefits in our existing parks that they would not have to pay a fee for, or they would pay the one-time fee, and then whatever charges we have in any of our other facilities, they'd be responsible for that too?
Thank you. Yes, they would still be responsible. So The fee goes into a line budget item for Parks and Rec to use at their discretion, whether it's to fix a swing set or help pay for a new one. Beyond that, let's say if folks in that subdivision wish to use amenities in the community center, they need to pay just like everyone else.
So then what would be the benefit to paying an in-lieu fee?
So the in-lieu fee benefit is it provides the ability for the town to improve its parks at its discretion.
I understand it would benefit the town, but then how would it benefit the developer or whoever is responsible for this property?
Good question. So as I mentioned, this has been used, I can only off the top of my head think of a half dozen times over the last 20 years it's been used, tops. And it usually is a developer that it's a small park. They don't see much utility in. There's another park nearby, public park nearby, in close proximity. And it's more advantageous to them in terms of time, energy, especially when it has low utility in terms of their view of the sales, to write the check and move on.
Okay, so it would be a cost savings to them up front? Because they would not have to put in a recreational area.
Good question. My sense is it's not a cost savings. Because we're charging them part of that in lieu fee, what would cost them anyway to put it in? It's a time savings. It's a time and energy savings.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah.
Vice Mayor Barrett and then Councilmember Green.
Okay, thanks. So if they pay the in lieu fee, can they put in another house? And because they would make money if they could put in another house in that location instead.
Certainly, that's possible.
Okay. So while we're on in lieu fee, I have three items of feedback of what I'd like to see at least options for in the code when it comes forward. First of all, I think the in lieu fee should be only for new amenities and not for upkeep of existing amenities, because part of the purpose of it is that we're having more people moving into the town, and so we need more capacity. So we don't want to get to the point where we're relying on new development to be able to fund just basic repairs and maintenance of our existing facilities. So I really think that if there's going to be an in lieu fee used, it needs to increase the capacity of our park system versus just have us funnel it into some delayed or deferred maintenance project, which I think would be tempting to do if we didn't specify that it couldn't be used for that. My second thought is, I think that if we're going to allow for an in lieu fee, in an ideal world, there should be some reasonable distance to the amenities that the in lieu fee would be used towards. That makes sense. Like, I know there was an in lieu fee used for the swing set at Riverfront Park, and that was for the development that was right across the street from Riverfront Park. So that made a lot of sense because we already had a park right across the street. We wanted to add the additional swing sets, a new amenity. So that really worked for the in lieu fee. But if we have a lot of other areas where there are no public parks anywhere close to where those people reside, then it could be doing a disservice to potential new residents to allow an in lieu fee to be used all the way across the town when that's really their recreation that they're sort of paying for with their house. And so similarly along those lines, I think we should have some options to be able to have builders negotiate those fees with existing HOAs. I know that when the Eagle Summit subdivision was developed in Rancho Vistoso, it was already right next to Hohokam Park and the trail system. So instead of putting a park into Eagle Summit, they added a whole new amenity feature in the existing HOA park that then got taken over by the master HOA. So that kind of worked for them because it was walking distance to the subdivision. It was a larger park. It was a new amenity. So it kind of met all those requirements and I think made sense. So even though that fee didn't go straight to the town, I think there's a good opportunity. Maybe if there's not a town park nearby, there could be an existing HOA or semi-public, I guess I should say, park that I think that we should have an opportunity for them to be able to have those discussions or negotiate if something like that makes sense. So those are my three comment feedbacks on the in lieu of fee.
Councilmember Green, did you?
I assume that this is one time. If a homeowner sells their home, does the person who moves in then accrue a fee for these amenities? Would be one question. The second is, how do we maintain them? Where's the money come from to maintain them?
Sure, Mayor Winfield, I'm Councilmember Green. So yes, unless if Mr. Vella says different, it is just a one-time fee. So if someone sells their house, there wouldn't be an additional in lieu fee. And then as far as the maintenance, are you wondering about the maintenance of the private parks? So those would be maintained by the HOA, if that answers your question.
I'll just add one comment because it's related to the vice mayor. It was a concern that I had in regards to the in lieu fee, and I just simply, you know, what happens when the developer pays this and the benefit is kind of outside of that 10-minute or half-mile zone so that it's not benefiting those. So that's a concern. These are great examples of how homeowners did benefit, but I suspect that there may be other examples where there just isn't the opportunity within that 10 or, and so I don't know that there's an answer for that, but it is a concern that I have, that it does seem that it could potentially leave some of our residents without a recreational resource that's within that half mile, 10-minute walk from their homes. And Ms. Oden, I appreciate your patience in your last evening here in with the town of Oro Valley.
Of course.
We have to make it epic for
carry on.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Winfield. Let's see. So I know we discussed the in lieu fees pretty extensively. But just overall, you know, the current code does require, there are in lieu fee options in the existing code. So the current code only allows subdivisions with 43 lots or less to utilize the full in lieu fee option. However, subdivisions with 85 lots or more can request an in lieu fee option for up to 50% of the cost of the rec area improvement. So the other thing, so basically with our proposed changes, private parks greater than a quarter of an acre, they still must provide that recreational area. But they also can request that in lieu fee option. Again, if there are special or if they can demonstrate, for instance, that, you know, they're close to an existing public park and that that's accessible to residents. So overall, these proposed changes, which will, you know, we got the feedback, we'll obviously, use that when drafting the code. But the changes would provide more flexibility, just creates a better balance as OV requirements are more restrictive than other jurisdictions. All right, so moving on. So the next finding has to do with the required recreation area size. So what we found, just looking at a bunch of other jurisdictions in Arizona and specifically jurisdictions closer to Oro Valley, is that Oro Valley's private recreation area size requirements are low compared to some, but not all, other Arizona jurisdictions. So currently, Oro Valley, in our zoning code, we require 1 acre per 85 dwelling units. So that's shown on the right-hand side of the slide. So we're pretty much kind of in the middle. On this slide are southern Arizona jurisdictions. Pima County is kind of at the highest, just their base requirement is 1.7 acres per 85 dwelling units, and the city of Tucson actually doesn't require any new recreation area in their new subdivisions. So what we are, we're proposing some standards to increase the minimum recreation area size requirement, again, to help meet that SLP objective. So for new developments that are not requesting a rezoning, so they're not asking for new entitlements, they're developing under their existing zoning, We're currently proposing no change to the current zoning code, pending further discussions with the town attorney, just because there are so little areas left in the town that would develop without a rezoning under their existing entitlements. However, for new developments that are requesting a rezoning, we're proposing to require, instead of 1 acre, require 1.75 acres of recreation area for 85 dwelling units. So this achieves greater parity with other nearby jurisdictions and puts us just ahead of Pima County, but it does meet the SLP objective by increasing the minimum required recreation area size and prioritizing larger parks.
Ms. Oden, Councilmember Solomon has a question.
Yes. I'm sorry, but the finding here says Oro Valley's private recreation area size requirements are low compared to some other Arizona jurisdictions. I could just as easily say it's high compared to other jurisdictions. It's right in the middle. And I just don't agree with saying that, you know, it's logical to go and increase the minimum size requirements. And what's proposed is highest of any existing requirements. Now, am I correct? Do we charge a park and recreation impact fee on new subdivisions and new homes? The answer is yes, we do. Now, Pima County doesn't, because Pima County, I believe, cannot have impact fees. So I would just want to look at this a lot closer, particularly for new developments. I believe that be in violation of state law, where it'd be considered a taking because we're changing the zoning requirements and all of a sudden requiring additional park space. So I'm glad you have with further discussions. As far as new developments, I would have to be convinced that we should be at the absolute top requirement of everyone on top of an additional park and recreation impact fee, particularly when we've just said, gee, all these parks we're making are underutilized and maybe they're really not needed. That's the other conclusion. People are not using the facilities because they don't want to. So the question is why don't they want to? I'm not sure if you can attribute it to the fact that, well, it's the wrong amenity. I would think in a new subdivision, like a, you know, one that particularly caters to the maximum square footage for the lowest cost that basically new families move into, I would think a tot lot or playground be heavily utilized. I don't think that's going to happen in Sun City. So I think we can learn a lot from asking, why aren't they being utilized? Maybe people don't want to walk for 10 minutes in 110-degree heat to go to a playground. Or maybe they can't utilize the playground during the day. Maybe they were all out there at 7, 8 o'clock at night. So I really have some issues with this whole finding number 3 and concluding that we need to require larger recreation areas. And remember, it's not the developer paying for these. It's each individual new resident who's buying a home. It's simple math like any other business. When you go in to buy a hamburger, that establishment has to cover the cost of the employees, of the rent, of the insurance, of the food, the other products. The same thing with the development. When they sell a new home, all these costs go into it, and then the sales price is set. So I think we always want to be careful when we're saying that the government should take more out of the pockets of individuals.
Councilmember Bowen.
Hannah and Byer, I actually appreciate your work on this because I read it for new developments as part of rezoning. So that's a buyer beware to me, no pun intended, but rather, you know, if you're going to rezone it, yes, especially for infill parcels in Oro Valley, why not? You know, 1.75 is only slightly higher than what Pima County has. And so I would say because you're tying it to a rezoning, personally, I don't think that that's a difficult condition and I could support it. Thanks.
Any other comments? Okay. Hi. I'll just speak that I am generally in favor of this particular finding of number three. I think overall my understanding from this analysis and also our Parks and Recreation Master Plan is that larger recreation, when I say larger than that quarter acre, mini parks as we're defining them, are more appealing for a variety of reasons. The size, you can have additional amenities. I would agree that that may not be true for every development. And so I think, Mr. Vella, Ms. Oden, you've talked about the flexibility in these zones. So I think that's also good, so that one size doesn't necessarily fit all. But I think in general, I support the higher allotment for recreation area, again, especially as it's tied to rezoning. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So we'll move on to the fourth finding, and this has to do with amenity requirements in private recreation areas. So the current zoning code does have amenity requirements for every new private recreation area that's built in the town. However, kind of what we found through looking at our code and kind of what's been built over the years is that there really is no provision in the zoning code to ensure that these amenities are meaningful in these recreation areas and that they have recreational value. So kind of an example of a park that has lesser value amenities is shown at the top right side of the slide. There's just a couple things there, maybe a horseshoe pit, I think maybe a picnic table. So just not, there just weren't a lot of meaningful amenities provided there that could have been. And that park was built in about 2003. So as staff, we're proposing some standards to ensure that there are quality amenities provided in every new recreation area. So the first proposed standard is to require minimum amenity types in every new recreation area. So these are things like any recreation area needs shade, seating, ADA access, trash receptacle. So at a minimum, every park would have that. And then what we did kind of for the second recommendation is we kind of recategorized the amenities that were in our code to an active and an additional amenity. And that's at the table at the bottom of this slide. So an active amenity are things that are a little bit bigger, might have kind of more of a focal point of the recreation area. So those are things like a basketball court, volleyball court, pickleball court, swimming pool. And then an additional amenity are things that are smaller but still have value, like a horseshoe pit, a small turf area, or like a small standalone play structure. So even a park that's a quarter of an acre would have a minimum of one active and one additional amenity required. And then for every additional half acre private recreation area, one active and one additional amenity would also be provided per this recommendation. On the bottom right-hand side of the slide, that's an example of actually the same one we showed in the previous slide, but a park with an example of some higher value amenities. So these are kind of things, and I should mention that this park does exceed zoning code standards. They really did put a lot there. But these are things that you might see. You might see a half basketball court, a small turf area, shaded play structure. And this was actually built just about a year after the park on the top side of the slide. So also these proposed changes would help towards consistency between new recreation areas. Overall, these proposed standards, prioritize more enhanced amenities as part of the SLP objective. I don't know if there's any questions.
Councilmember Solomon has a question.
First, I'd like to state I'm very pleased that the lesser value amenity is not one that I was involved with, so I'm happy to say that. I generally agree with what you have on this finding for. The only thing I would say is that we want to be flexible on the what the active amenities and additional amenities are. The property owner, the developer, may have a better feel of their demographics and target market. They may say, hey, what we think will work really well here is such and such. So I like when we have something like this as examples, but I would also like the code to have flexibility where the applicant can go to staff and say, you know, we think this would be a good use. If staff agrees, you know, be able to go that route, or even if it's necessary to come to council. But I would think that, you know, they might come up because, you know, pickleball courts are popular now. They weren't 20 years ago. Things change. I understand that little putting greens were highly popular not too long ago. By the way, that was a tiered level. You didn't see that, so you had to work at it. Now, so yeah, I agree with this. And like I said, my suggestion would be to add some of the flexibility in there.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Now, looking at the lesser value amenities on the top, if we approve these zoning code changes, how would that impact the lesser value amenities?
Mayor Winfield.
Would they then have to add additional amenities?
Councilmember Jones-Ivey, the amenities would just be for new recreation areas. Yeah, we wouldn't require already constructed parks to add amenities.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
I was just going to comment that I think a list like this does provide flexibility because there's different type of demographics that could be targeted within active amenities and additional amenities, et cetera. So I think what you've put together is a good start moving forward because some subdivisions might want a swimming pool. Some subdivisions might want a play structure, some might want pickleball, depending on kind of what their target market is. But and you've allowed them the opportunity to take advantage of that.
With this list of active amenities and additional amenities, does this provide an opportunity for the developer, for the community to select an active amenity that's not listed here, but that would be comparable or right, comparable to? These are some suggested amenities, so for comparison purposes, is that the idea?
Mayor Winfield, yes, and we can, as we draft the code, we can see what that, you know, looks like. It could be subject to administrative approval for, you know, something that is very comparable. And we will be expanding this list as well.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so the last finding has to do with multifamily residential requirements. So kind of, so what we also found kind of similar to the previous slide is that there's no provisions to ensure that there are meaningful amenities provided in multifamily residential developments. So these are apartment R6 developments. And that how the existing recreation area requirement is written in the code, it's pretty confusing. So we're proposing standards to require more meaningful amenities and also to simplify the recreation area size requirements in multifamily residential developments. So one of our proposed standards is that multifamily residential developments would have the same amenity requirements as single-family residential developments for their outdoor area. So that was similar to the slide that I just went over as far as the one active and one additional minimum as well as the other minimum amenities. So those would be the same as the single family residential requirements. And also the next proposed standard, it's essentially a code cleanup item. It's just to simplify the existing zoning code language to require 17% of the development area to be set aside as recreation area. Right now, as it's written in the code, it's like 50% of the 35% open space is recreation area. So there's no change to open space. There's no change to the required recreation area. It just simplifies it because it is confusing. I can answer
Vice
any questions.
Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. This is where I had some area of concern because our existing code language guarantees 35% open space in this R6 zoning and then says that half of the 35% open space needs to be for recreational amenity. And I think it says that it needs to be contiguous, right? Doesn't our existing code say that recreational amenity needs to be together? So I feel like we're losing a lot by this proposed change, because my first question is, what happens to the 18% of open space that would otherwise be required? When we say there's no reduction to open space, we should then also have an additional 18% open space required, correct?
So Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, and Mr. Bello might want to jump in as well, but that other open space, those would be in things like landscaped areas and buffer yards as well. If that answers your question.
So for me, that's not adequate unless it has that percentage that meets the same percentage that we have. And I think that's what I was trying to get at earlier when I said, you know, no reduction in open space. It's not enough to say, well, they're going to have some buffer yards, but we don't know exactly how much. And it depends on, you know, the different development, because I think we're losing something. I think we're losing 18% open space. I think that needs to be specified, that if we're going to simplify the code language to require 17% of development area to be set aside as recreation area, then we need an additional 18% open space. Otherwise, we're reducing the open space requirement. So, and then the other thing I think we're potentially losing is our existing code requires that rec area to be contiguous. And so I don't know why we wouldn't maintain that requirement, since part of the purpose of this was to try and make larger contiguous areas where people could recreate. So I feel like we should maintain the requirement that that we currently have, that the rec area be contiguous. And then I'll also add, while I'm here at multifamily option residential, the one thing I'd like to see in the code moving forward is maybe an option for this that we could then discuss is dealing with the number of units. So our current requirement is about the area of the property, which is kind of strange because our single family residential is not about the area of the property, but is about the number of units. And so the reason this is a concern is, you know, with Marketplace, that what was originally being proposed on Marketplace of a 6-story apartment, 5 stories of actual apartments on 10 acres of property, then we're talking about a lot more people and units on a smaller parcel. And even though that's not what's moving forward for development, in the event that were ever proposed again or something similar, I feel like the density of the single family or of the multifamily residential in question should help determine the size and requirements of the recreational area. So for me, I don't think it makes sense to have a requirement for a certain amount of acreage for 85 lots of single family residential, but then when you get to multifamily where you have a much more dense property, to suddenly say now it's a ratio of the acreage of the property. Instead, there should be some connection to the number of units, and it should bear some relationship to what we provide for our single family residential. So those are my comments regarding these proposed changes. Is just that I don't want to lose what we have for open space and recreation being unified, and I think we need to take a look at the number of units.
Councilmember Solomon.
I agree with the per unit measurement, as I mentioned, that we may also want to consider that in single family homes, because when you get a high density development with, say, 80 units on several acres versus 15 units on several acres on a larger subdivision is obviously different recreation requirements, and particularly in apartment complexes, which is obviously the highest density we have. I'm just not so sure about the contiguous. I've been in some of the apartment complexes in Oro Valley that are fairly large, and it's an enormous distance going from an apartment on one end to the recreation area in certain cases. So once again, I would like to leave the flexibility there. Maybe in some cases it does make sense to say, no, we want it one large area. In others, it may make a lot more sense in some apartment complex. They have two pool areas or, you know, recreational areas or park or open space areas towards each end of the apartment complex. So I believe we should have some, once again, ability for flexibility given the design of the project.
Councilmember Bowen and then Vice Mayor Barrett.
I concur with setting the requirement. Since we're taking a big, long look at this, that to me is something that's a little bit off. Why is multifamily percentage of land area? That just, you know, incentivizes you to build up and provide a very small recreational area. Why couldn't we have requirements? If it's in single family, you know, 1 acre per 85 residents, why couldn't it be something like 1 acre per 100 residences or 110 or something like that? Acknowledging that we do expect less recreational amenities in multifamily, perhaps we're renting or, you know, we're not paying as much. But yeah, I think that's something to be looked at now. That, you know, if we're ever going to do it now. Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I understand the idea of separating, and there may be circumstances where that makes sense, but we have multifamily developments in Oro Valley where there are teeny tiny little corners on the very edge of the multifamily development way out in the corner that have a little tot lot that no one uses that's just being carved out by the edge of the parking lot to satisfy these area requirements. And that's something that we need to avoid. So that's why I think that, you know, our current requirement is that the 17.5% be contiguous. And so I don't know that we want to give that up unless we can, or at minimum, the developer could make a strong case to the town council or whatever about, you know, why they need it segregated. Like, say, like Councilmember Solomon says, they want two pools so people don't have to cross the street, perhaps. You know, that's definitely something that we would want to consider. But I don't think we want to say you can just stick little pockets of recreation next to the parking lot anywhere. And that's what I think we want to try and avoid in this code.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yeah, and I hate to use the term. I would think the attorneys would have it. But I agree with the vice mayor on the example she just gave. It's not meaningful. I think, and I hate to see it when a developer does something like that. They're just trying to check off the box and be done with it. To me, that never made sense. You want to make the best product you can, the most attractive product you can. Now, maybe when the competition is such as that you can fully rent every single unit no matter what, you can get away with that. And it's unfortunate. But once again, you know, maybe there's some way it can be worded where I would just don't want to get down and say it's got to be contiguous. We want, obviously, meaningful recreational space that, particularly in high density, let's face it, there's no backyards. It's a sea of parking. So you need that relief. You need that open space, that recreational space. And once again, I wouldn't consider a little tot lot at the end of a parking lot, you know, as meaningful or useful. So I don't know if there's some terminology we can come up with where there's some flexibility where we know what our end goal is. We want a good, usable recreational space that's located so that it will be utilized. If people have to walk too far, they probably won't utilize it. So along those suggestions. Thank you.
I'm in agreement with the.
All right, so just moving on. So for any code amendment, we do review for conformance with the general plan and strategic leadership plan. So some key general plan goals and policies are on this slide that we'll be reviewing for conformance with as we work through drafting the code. As well as the general plan focal guiding principle that has to do with providing recreation and cultural opportunities for all ages. And the strategic leader plan, strategic leadership plan direction is on this slide as well. All right, so just in summary, I know we've had a lot of great discussion this evening, but this is just a summary of all the recommendations and everything that was provided during the presentation. So I'm happy to answer any additional questions at this time. Just as a reminder, kind of what the process will look like moving forward, based on the feedback received tonight, as well as the feedback we received from PRAB and the Planning and Zoning Commission, we'll start drafting that code language, and then it will come back to the actual code language will come back for consideration to PRAB, Planning and Zoning Commission, and then ultimately Town Council. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Oden. Other questions? Councilmember Jones Ivy.
I just have a comment. Hannah, good luck. We're going to miss you. Enjoy the new job.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hannah, thank you very much. We appreciate your presentation tonight and all the work that you've done. This is some great work, and we look forward to the code language that will come back to council. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll conclude our study session. Good night, everyone.